This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everyone. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio. Here we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak live on BBS Radio every Tuesday night at 9 to 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time or by going to our website, thepeoplespeakradio.com. There you can also listen to our live shows or to past shows on our iPod Ready archive section. That's www.thepeoplespeakradio.com. And if you have a Nokia phone, you can also listen live via satellite. Just go to the website for details. I have a great friend here tonight in Yusuf Barakat. Yusuf is a psychotherapist and peace activist. He was born in Haifa, Palestine, and was displaced from his homeland at the age of 12 in August of 1947. Yusuf Barakat's family left their home when Jewish immigrants were settled in Palestine after World War II. And this 12-year-old shepherd boy landed at Ellis Island with his family, not speaking a word of English. 4 years later, his father died, leaving Yusuf to take care of his mother and his three sisters. And he's been taking care of the needy ever since. He's now a retired psychotherapist. Yusuf Barakat has devoted himself to working with boys in the juvenile justice system, helping them to develop trust and relationships through his treatment and rehabilitation program, and he is a dear friend of mine. Hi, Yusuf. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm so happy to be with you.
Well, it's my pleasure. I have known Yusuf for many, many years, and even before I knew Yusuf, Yusuf was a colorful figure in our metropolitan Detroit area, in the Dearborn activist area. And there's many questions that I'd like to talk to you about. Well, one of them is, Yusuf, when did you start wearing the apparel that you wear? Yusuf has a very unique way of dressing, and he's very proud of it. And we're just so used to seeing you in your outfit that we don't think twice about it anymore. I still remember when I was younger and I would watch you at marches or at events, and I would think, I wonder who this guy is. I wasn't sure if I was to take you seriously or not, but as I have, through the years, have come to know that you are certainly a serious force to be reckoned with. Tell me about your outfit, Yusuf.
My outfit is my persona.
Anyway.
It goes back to when I got off at Ellis Island as a 12-year-old boy, and I was just different. And I was put back in school because I didn't speak the language, and the kids would, you know, taunt me and so on. And then the teacher saw that what a nice example I was of the polite boy, old country. And she told him, class, this young man is unique. And in Arabic, that's a bad word. But all I heard was unique. And I said, not me, no. And since then, I've been different. I started out being different. The reason for the clothes is it's really a form of expression. And ever since I've landed in this country, I resisted regimentation. I resisted being funneled, and so everybody's wearing a blue shirt, so now we all have to wear blue shirts and that kind of thing. So I maintained my uniqueness and personal expression, and it's tasteful. The scarf I wrap around my head is a Palestinian symbol and actually a Palestinian flag, but it's very tasteful. And It draws attention so that Some people might say, oh, this guy's a kook, but that's how shallow or deep people are based on the fact that they would reject the person because he looks different. So it's just a form of expression that I like to show that people should be independent and not have to dress alike. And, you know, I mean, that's our diversity, the beauty of our cultures. And we shouldn't have to be standardized.
Well, I absolutely.
That's a long question.
You're certainly a sight for sore eyes. Whenever we see you, I don't know. It just there's no event here in the Michigan area that's ever complete without you and without your.
Thank you. Yeah. But I like to tell people it's not about me. It's about the message.
It's
so,
about the message. And it's
about the message. And I'd like to take a moment, if you would, and introduce the message by saying this fairly short poem. It's actually a Native American expression. And I'd like to say it as a beginning to give
please,
us a sense of what it's about. I mentioned it to you. Can I do it now?
Yes. Absolutely, Yusuf. I would be thrilled to hear it again. I have heard it before, and I'm sure that our listeners will appreciate this.
Right. As I said, it's a Native American ritual prayer, and it starts like this. Teach your children that the earth is our mother. Whatever befalls the earth befalls the sons and daughters of the earth. This we know, the earth does not belong to us. We belong to the earth. This we know, that all things are connected, like the lifeblood which unites one family. All things are connected. Whatever befalls the earth befalls the sons and daughters of the earth. We did not weave the web of life. We are merely a strand in it. Whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves.
That is absolutely beautiful. And that is a shorter, I think there was a little bit more to it, but thank you for that. It is.
Oh, you're probably referring to the six directions.
I do the
six directions every morning, but that would take too much time, and it's not really important to our message today, but I just wanted to start with this because I wanted to show that we really are all one people on the earth. And the sooner we start dealing with that reality, the better we can all be.
I know you said that the Palestinians and the Native Americans have shared empathy for each other's suffering. And we have a great community of support through the Native Americans. And we, in turn, as Palestinians, support the message of the genocide that happened to the Native Americans here in the United States. Yusuf, you had a very interesting experience, I can only say that somehow you were extremely privileged. The Gaza Freedom March. And for those of you that don't know what that is, it was an international event in December of 2009, I believe. And this event brought together international witnesses and international members of the peace community to the Palestinian Gaza area, in order that they help break the siege of the occupiers, Israel, in Gaza. After that unbelievable assault on Gaza called Cast Lead, many people died. I believe there were about 1,600 people that died, and they were not allowing anybody to enter into the Gaza territory, not even witnesses. They were not allowing relief to enter. They were not allowing humanitarian aid to enter. They were not allowing food, water, or anything else to enter into the area. Yet they allowed I think it was 85 individuals, if I'm not mistaken, Yusuf, and you were one of them. Can you tell us about that? Can you tell us how you were chosen? First of all, a little bit about the history of the march itself and how you got involved in it, and how were you chosen? Hello, Yusuf. I think we're having a bit of some sound problem.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes. I'm sorry. For some reason, you had died out completely.
Oh, I don't know what happened. I heard a lot of clicking, so we broke up. But for the sake of those listening, the Gaza Freedom March resulted in, it was, first of all, one of the sponsors, or the sponsor, was Code Pink, ladies who came together many years ago and formed a peace society, so to speak, and they have done marvelous jobs, and they sponsored this. 1,400 internationals came to Cairo, and only 85 of us were allowed to go in, and truly I was privileged. I met there a dear friend, a Jewish lady who is a survivor from the Holocaust, and she's 85 years old, and I'm 75, so I can talk about age without being shy. But the thing is that...
You're still 25 to me, Yusuf.
I asked Hadi to call, and I hope she's on the line at some point through the hour, and I'd like for her to speak a little bit about the trip, and especially about the divestment that's going on in California. But it would take too long to explain why only 85. The point is that the Egyptian government refused to allow entry. And there's a whole lot of politics, and it's very difficult to really bring people up to speed without taking a whole hour. So the main thing is that at the last moment it was decided that 100 can go in, because we had medicines and we had all kinds of toys for children and many things. We had truckload of supplies. So they allowed 100, but only 85 went in, because there was some friction between those who were assigned to go and those who weren't. And I don't want to get involved in that aspect of it either. But I do want to say that I was fortunate. And I want, as an aside also, to say about the women, you know, when the goddess was in vogue, there was peace, because the feminine, the goddess, is the nurturer, the birther, the giver of life. And when it got transferred to the male god image, the warrior, we've had nothing but violence. So I honor the women at Code Pink who have struggled, and I think Hedy Epstein, that I just mentioned, the Holocaust survivor, is one of that, part of that group, and I honor them for that. So the thing is that we did go in. Unfortunately, we had 4 days. The whole idea was that all 1,400 people were going to be allowed to go in, and we were going to live amongst the people by going to people's homes and really getting personal. And hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hello. Hello, Hedy?
Yes.
Well, hello.
Hello.
I guess we have our Hedy Epstein with us this evening.
Hedy, I'm so glad you called in. I told them a little bit about you, and we haven't got to discussing the divestment thing, but you might want to say a few words. They were asking me about how it felt to be in Cairo, and then for me, I went in. I think you chose not to go in, so maybe you can tell us a little bit about that, Hedy.
Yeah, well, I chose not to go after the Egyptian government, or Mr. Mubarak, decided that 100 of us out of the 1,400 could go because we were decent people, but the rest of us were hooligans. And I just could not, even though I was one of the 100 that could go in, I opted not to go because I just could not be complicit with the Egyptian government and with the Israeli and American government who were putting pressure on the Egyptian government to not let the rest of us go into Gaza.
Honor that, Hadi, and I think that was a wonderful act. And you also started a hunger strike, right? Tell us about that.
Yes. Well, when I found out that initially none of us were allowed to go to Gaza, I decided to go on a hunger strike, and I asked if others to join me, and I thought maybe two or three or four might join, but I understand about 40 people joined me, and not only 40 people in Cairo, but even in my own community here in St. Louis where I live, people went on a hunger strike, and I understand in other cities across the world, people also went on a hunger strike in sympathy.
Wow, that is admirable. I'm just so proud to know you, Hadi. And I do want to mention how grateful I am to all my Jewish brothers and sisters who see the inhumanity in this situation and have put themselves out there. I mean, the Jewish community can ostracize a person, and they still take the chance and go out there and speak truth. And that, I admire that. Thank you, Hadi. You also were involved with the divestment thing in California. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, last week I was at the University of Berkeley in California. Last month, in March, the student senate passed a resolution overwhelmingly, 14-6, asking the university to divest from two companies, General Electric and United Technologies. And about a week after they passed this resolution overwhelmingly, the student association president vetoed it. And so the student senate last Wednesday did an all-nighter trying to override that veto. We did not succeed. I was one of many people that testified that evening, or maybe it was early morning. It really wasn't over until 7:15 the following morning. The last time I pulled an all-nighter, I remember, was the day the war was over in Europe, and I was all over London celebrating. But they tabled the decision, and because it was only they voted 12 for overturning the veto, 7 supported the veto and 1 abstained. And to keep it alive, they tabled it, and the student senate will be able to come back within a week or so to try and overturn that veto.
Bassima, are you having trouble hearing Hadi, or
no,
just the
thing? Yeah, everything. I just wanted for our listeners to clarify that Hadi Epstein was one of the people that went to the march in Cairo. And Hadi is not a Holocaust survivor, and unfortunately her family are not Holocaust survivors. And Hadi, for me, a Palestinian, and I'm sure for you, if I speak for you as well, I want to thank you. We honor and respect deeply the commitment that you have made to honoring justice in the territories.
Thank you.
Can you briefly tell me, Hadi, do you think
I would like
that
to ask...
Hello?
Yeah. I would like to ask that people contact or email the student senate in support of overriding the veto. And they can email to Senate, that's S-E-N-A-T-E, at A, S as in Sam, U as, and U, C as in Charlie, .org. I'll repeat,
and
Senate
that is, and
at A-S-U-C.org.
Yeah, yeah. Hadi, you've been breaking up, so I'm going to repeat it for them so that we make sure that they get it from at least one of us. It's the word Senate, S-E-N-A-T-E, at ASUC.org. That's the email address, and Hedy suggests that we all send emails stating that the divestment should be allowed to go through because we are paying out of our tax dollars the corporations, we are paying for all the destruction that is happening in Palestine. So I encourage everyone to send something. And your congresspeople and, you know, everybody knows what we need to do. We just have to pass, get the word out that there is a Holocaust going on, and people like Hedy and other friends that from the Jewish community have been so good in trying to get this word out, the Jewish Voice for Peace and so many others. Yesterday I went to see Halpern. He's from the Home Demolitions. If we know how many homes are being demolished every day, Palestinians being displaced, it's so sad. So
let me ask you something, please. Since you did, you were privy to a vision that I don't think very few outsiders will ever see. Can you tell us what you witnessed in Gaza?
Well, you know, when Katrina hit, I volunteered to go down there. I think I spent 1 or 2 weeks. I don't remember now. It's been a while. But you see devastation. You see things that are destroyed. When nature does that, we all rush over and help. But when humans do that to a totally innocent and unarmed people, well, we sit and watch. It's like keeping score or something. I don't know. But it's the same devastation. Buildings collapse. People can go on my website, yusif.org. Yusif is Y-U-S-I-F dot O-R-G.
That link is on our website as well, Yusif.
Okay, and you can see pictures of the devastation.
You can click on
to beyond that, it's the point that we just... I wanted to come back to this point about cast lead. Now, listen to this. Lead is the heaviest metal on Earth, right? And when you cast something in lead, you basically just make them into statues. You freeze them. How do they think that they should go over to Gaza and cast everybody in lead and destroy them? But they're destroying their homes. They're destroying some of them that are dying and many innocent people, but they're not destroying the spirit. And the spirit and the will of the people to go on. They want to rebuild like they did in Katrina. But the problem is the Israelis will not allow anything in or out. So it's the world's largest prison. And that's on my website.
Let me ask you, and due to some personal problems that I've been dealing with in my own personal life, Yusif, what is going on now with Gaza? Can you kind of update us on the conditions there? Do you hear from friends there, people that you may have met while you were in Gaza?
Yes, I'd be glad to share that. I went more than Gaza. I was there for a whole month. Everybody came there for a week or thereabouts. But I just want to check. Hedy, are you still on? Oh, okay, because I don't know. I wasn't able to hear her, so I wasn't sure if she said goodbye. And I want to thank her for taking the time to come on with us.
Well, Hedy, if you're there, thank you very much. That was Hedy Epstein, Holocaust survivor, and peace activist supporting the withdrawal from the occupation in Gaza and in Palestine in general.
Yes, it's all about humanity. It's really all about humanity. And what it is about now in the system we live under, it's about money. It's about power, and that those two things don't equate. But anyway, I was in Cairo, and we did a lot of demonstrating there to try and get the Cairo government to open the border. But obviously, you know, it comes from such higher sources. But in any case, then I went to Gaza. I was one day traveling, 2 days there, and one day traveling back. And I had the fortune to be there for New Year's Eve. What a way to bring in a new year. I've been many places in the world and brought in New Year's, but being in Gaza on New Year's Eve, this last New Year's, was just a gift that I
always cherish. So were you actually in Gaza? Were you actually in Gaza on New Year's Day and New Year's
Eve? Yes, yes. So we danced and we had a party, and the people are so hospitable and loving and generous. Again, an hour wouldn't be, you know, enough to explain the beauty of the Palestinian people, the hospitality, the hope that they continue. The problem is that there is politics, because the people that want the disruption continue to breed and infest between people. So we have divisiveness between Palestinians. And that's the mark of imperialism. That's the mark of exploitation, colonialism. What they do is they divide and conquer. So they even split the Palestinians between this faction and that group, and we forget about that it's only about one humanity, and that is people that are totally innocent, have been there thousands of years. Jesus was born in Palestine. So the gall to come and just take over a people's land and then treat them the way the Palestinians are being treated now is unconscionable, totally unconscionable. We did that to the Indians 400 years ago, but look at them now. They're in little reservations, and that's what's happening to Palestine. And
now,
it's
let me ask
not
you
right.
Huh? Let me ask you something. I know that you have a great love for the United States as well. I know you. I've known you for many years, and this is not this is pretty well the circumstance with all Palestinians in our area. How do you feel about the funding of the these horrible events that happened to the Palestinian people based on American funding?
Okay. I began with the prayer to Mother Earth, and I look at everything from that perspective. I look down and see how humans are behaving. To me, countries don't mean a thing, because, you see, my love is for the land, not the government. Not the government. So the point is that the Palestinians love the land, and I love the land wherever I am. And I always work in harmony with everything around me. But when you talk about American government, lots of things are done that are totally unconscionable by our government. And I go to this extreme. Hitler told people, my country, right or wrong, support it. And I tell people, my country, when right, support it. When wrong, fix it. So it's not I have love for America or hate America or don't either or. I love where I am, and I love the people, and I love the land. I don't love the political behavior that results in the exploitation of people. I would have objected to that if I was around during the Holocaust, and I'm objecting to that not because I'm a Palestinian, but because I object to it wherever it happens. And that's really the message we
really
need to hear.
That's an excellent answer, and I thank you for that, Yusuf. You don't mind if I coin that next time I'm asked.
yeah.
there was.
You know, everybody knows my feelings about loving nature, about loving peace, about loving people. That's what it's about. It's not about loving ideologies.
That's probably why they chose you as one of the people to enter into the Kazakh.
they never heard me say that, so I don't think that's why. But no, I think they allowed me in because the people, although I didn't have a lot of experience with them, the people from Code Pink, I did interact with a few of them about a week or two before the trip, and I tuned in on different telephone conversations where we asked questions, that kind of thing. So they knew my heart, and I think they chose me because I went with I went from Michigan representing the Michigan Peace Team. I've been working with the Michigan
Peace
Team.
Kim Redding, a good friend of ours, was also
with you. Yes, five women from the Michigan Peace Team, and Kim and Sherry and I'm sorry, I don't want to have to. The thing is that the six of us were in Cairo, and we worked together in demonstrations and that kind of thing. And then they woke me up at 1 in the morning. The phone rang, and they said, "We're coming to your room." And they all crashed in my room telling me I'm going to Gaza. And I said, "No way," because we were so disappointed that we didn't go there to do street demonstrations. We went there to go to Gaza and be with the people. So, but in any case, they were so wonderful, and they helped me put a few things together because I had to be at the terminal for the bus at 7 in the morning. And by the time we got around to talking about it, it was already 3, so it was wonderful.
It was a big decision, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I was... when Hedy said she chose not to go, and I really truly understand that, but for me, having been from the land, and not necessarily from Gaza, I'm from Haifa, but see, there again, we get divided up. We get as if we're in different, you know, areas or different countries. We're all one. The point is, I had an opportunity to go into Gaza and speak in the language, in Arabic, which I love, and speak with the people and get firsthand a view of what's going on. And
I was envious,
to thank the women that asked me to do that.
I'm certainly envious of that. I would have loved to have been there myself. I had spoken to some of the people. Unfortunately, due to certain circumstances, I wasn't able to go. There were a lot of good people that attended this. This was an international and community effort, witnesses from all over the world. People like Pulitzer Prize winning author Alice Walker, who I happen to have a personal love for. I love Alice Walker's poetry, and as a matter of fact, I have her book right in my hand. This is one of the books that I picked up in London when I was there a number of years ago. And she says, "In these dissenting times, to acknowledge our ancestors means we are aware that we did not make ourselves, that the line stretches all the way back, perhaps to God or to gods. We remember them because it is an easy thing to forget, and we are not the first to suffer, rebel, fight, love, and die. The grace with which we embrace life, in spite of the pain and the sorrows, is always a measure of what has gone before." This is from a section where she deals with revolutionaries and lovers, because there is so much passion involved in this. Do you see an end to the suffering of the people in Gaza and the people in Palestine, Yusuf?
That's such a beautiful poem, and it really, again, speaks back to our nature as divine beings. One of the problems is that we have taken that divinity and divided it up into religions, and the division between the different religions keep the turmoil going. So we are divine beings, and as such, we really have an obligation to take care of humanity, all of us, every son or daughter of humanity, including all the animals and the creatures and nature. Because after all, we come from the earth and we go back to the earth, do we not? Now, the spirit has to be dealt with on a personal level. The fact that we have a spirit that comes into us when we're born, a spirit that leaves and goes to the afterlife and all that, that's all fine and good, and people can define it for themselves. But for now, for here, we have to take care of the humanity, and that includes all the suffering. I just finished playing racquetball today with my partner, and the three or four guys were standing, and we start talking about that. I don't know why. They said, you must be practicing for your radio show. I said, no, I'm not even going to bring up this subject, but here it is. The point is that suffering should not be allowed, especially the suffering that we bring on to one another. As far as the Palestinians, we have to raise the consciousness of Americans. Believe me, every American I speak to always agrees, always says, you know, that's not right. But they don't know what to do. So the thing is that we need to entice them or get them to recognize that it's by their consent that it's going on. And that is by the tax money we pay goes to these kinds of things. So they can then decide what activity they need to follow, what path they need to do to begin to object to this kind of inhumanity. Wherever it happens, not just in Palestine, in Iraq, everywhere, everywhere, we create enemy and then we go to kill them. And then they fight back and say, aha, you see, they're terroristic. It's insane. It's an insanity.
No, in your, at one of your excerpts from your report in your visit to Gaza, you wrote, the GFM delegation learned about the incredible resilience of Gazians. So the grip of the occupation and now the added blockade brings misery to the people of Gaza. Their spirit is not crushed. Gazians rally together and care for one another. They are convinced that the blockade and the occupation will end, and until that time, they believe their spirit will prevail. Delegates also noted that hope-filled signs of art, music, dance, and humor are evident and growing within the Gazian society. You know, we just had a group of relatives. As a matter of fact, I was just with one of my cousins who just came back from the annual Federation trip, to the West Bank. And she said, for a people at war, they live a better life than we do here in the United States. We work day and night. We never have time to visit or to be with friends anymore or to be with family or to have just plain downtime. And she said, yet in a war-torn nation, they know how to live better than we do. Do you think, and this is something that I noticed when I was back there the few times that I've been there as well, is that the people of this war-torn nation have learned to embrace life fully.
Let me cut in for a minute. It's not war-torn. A war is between two armies. we gotta call an ace an ace. This is an invasion. This is an attack and in against all human rights. This is the doings of, and I'm gonna give you three words: genocide, apartheid, and ethnic cleansing. There is all three of these things going on because it has been the tradition of this nation called Israel in obliterating Palestine, obliterating Palestinians, obliterating the name. They won't allow it to be in books. I can go on and on. The point is, I'm not against them. I'm not saying we need to drive them to the sea. I'm saying that they took my land. They took other people's land. Now what they should do is open the borders and allow everybody to come in. They're democratic. Well, let's have a democracy. Just open the borders and let the Palestinians come, and Palestinians and Jews can live together. This is not about religion. This is about capitalist colonialism. This is about land grabbing, and it's all about oil in the Middle East. So, are you there?
Oh, yes. Joe, Yusuf?
I'm not sure what that is.
Yeah.
Yusuf?
Yeah.
Yusuf Nahad. I'm listening to you.
I think we're being monitored, and they're trying to disrupt our broadcast.
Must be those Zionists again. Is this Hetty? Are you back with us?
No, that I'm behind you 100%, and that as an American myself, I agree with you 100%.
Oh, that's thank you. I didn't get the person's name.
This is me. It's your sister, Nahad.
Oh, thank you, honey. Now I got a following of one. That's great. I love you, sweetheart. Thank you. Thanks for calling.
Okay, I don't want to interrupt your time on the radio, but you're doing a great job.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Okay,
right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Nahad, so that was Yusuf's sister, Nahad. Thank you very much.
Nahad, yeah. She was a baby. She was 1 year old when we came to America. And, that's so cute. What I want to say is that it's up to each and every one of us to tell other people to do whatever is necessary to end the suffering for those people. Because they have a good spirit and they still persevere should not mean that we should just let them keep suffering. So the suffering is man-made, and it's made by people themselves who were suffered by others. I mean, who can go through a Holocaust and then come around and do the similar things to people? It's insane. So I'm not against Jews. I'm not against Israel. I'm against the inhumanity of the suffering that's going on. So we want peace. Let's really open up the borders and allow people to come in and be in their homes, Jews and Palestinians and Christians and Muslims and whoever else. That's the only way the suffering is going to end. Otherwise, Mike does not make right. Getting a bigger enemy, getting a bigger bomb or a bigger army doesn't do it.
Yusuf and I had an interesting opportunity where we were at Wayne State University for an event hosted by the Department of Conflict Resolution, and we were together with a group of kind of face-off mock negotiation of the peace agreement trying to be forged out by people right here in the metropolitan Detroit area. That was a fascinating experience, Yusuf, I have to tell you. I thought it was, to me, I have never, as much as I thought I knew, until I've actually sat down with Israelis, and they consider themselves Israelis, they when they identified themselves as Israelis.
You know why? Because the irony is that every Jew is automatically an Israeli. Now, whether they get the citizenship or not, doesn't matter. See, there's an expression in Arabic that says, free Palestine from Israel and free Jews from Zionism.
Mm-hmm.
So it's ironic that anybody in Russia, even in Africa, if they're Jewish, they can be automatically not only a citizen, but they'll pay you to come there and they'll give you an apartment and they'll support you. You can't imagine the benefits you get. But you take someone like me who was born and raised there, my ancestors go back in history, and they gave me such a hard time. Because when I left Gaza, I went to Amman and to Tel Aviv, and I went to Haifa where I was born, and to the West Bank and Bel'ain, and I just toured all over. I had a dear friend who did the movie, Bel'ain, My Love. His name is Shai. He's an Israeli Jew and he made this movie to show the obnoxious absurdity of the way that the Israeli military treats Palestinians. You would not believe it even surpasses the way we treated blacks.
Well, I'll tell you, just the very words, the obnoxious absurdity of, you know, they claim that they want to have peace negotiations with Palestine, but then at the same breath, they utter the words that Palestine doesn't exist.
Yeah,
they want
yeah.
to have.
But I wanted to say that I stayed with my friend Shai in his place, and he took me around, and I even went with him to a trial. He was arrested along with 15, 20 other young people, and this happens frequently over there because there are many beautiful, wonderful people in Israel that are really working hard for the peace movement, for equal rights for all people. I love these people. They are so humane. So the sad part is the Jews that have been taken over by Zionism, and they insist on having this allegiance to an unholy way of life. It's hurting Israel, and it's hurting the United States. You should see the reputation of the United States elsewhere in the world based on the unconditional support we give Israel. Now, how can we be a peacemaker if we're all on one side? So people must really object. They should really flood their government and whatever. Just speak to people and say this.
Because
if we were living during Hitler, I would say shame on us if we weren't doing the same thing.
I would.
We need
to
object.
Well, even now,
this kind of inhumanity anywhere in the world.
Yeah, shame on us for allowing this to continue. Let me ask you, Yusuf.
Did you see somebody is coming on the phone?
I think
hi,
so.
Somebody on the
it's
line?
It's me, Mayors.
Oh, Mayors.
Hi, Yusuf. Hi.
Wow, how nice you came on.
I've been listening.
I asked you people to call. Go ahead, Mayors.
I'm going to get off because you're doing a good job explaining. Goodbye.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate
you,
Mayors.
Can you tell me who that was,
yes. Yeah, she's a dear friend that I've known in the movement for many years. She and her husband are so giving to the movement. There again, American people that totally have nothing to do with anything in Palestine, but they see the suffering, they see the inhumanity. That's what the Michigan Peace Team does. That's what many organizations that go to South America, everywhere where there is suffering. You know, she's just a dear person, and she was so supportive when I was in Cairo, and she called and made appointments for me with delegates and all that, but it never worked out because the Cairo government never allowed anything like that. But the thing is that we have to become indignant at the arrogance. Let me remind everyone that last year, the United States spent $900 billion in military spending. And we're asking for $900 billion just to help people with health care. Now, whether you agree with it or not, the point is we need to look at health care. $900 billion for 10 years. And that's helping people, not destroying people.
And
we really need to look at construction rather than destruction, and we need to start saying this is insane. Might does not make right. Imagine if Hitler won the war. Just picture that. So then that means that Nazi fascism would have been the right thing, and everybody in the world would live under that. It's crazy. Might does not make right. Right is by human right.
We have an email question for you. Art in New York asks, what is the guest view to a solution with Israel-Palestine, a one- or a two-state solution?
No, I mentioned earlier, open the border. You cannot have a two-state solution. It's just impossible because Israel built settlements, again, it would take so long to explain all this, but you folks need to start looking at doing some research. My website has a lot of movies you can see and books you can read and that kind of thing. So the point is that as it is now, it's impossible because they are now into little Bundestans. They got little enclaves that they call the territories. They don't even call it Palestine. And the rest of it is Israel, and the military is so pervasive, it controls everything, checkpoints and so on. So the only real solution, of course, it's the hardest to do, is to give up the idea that there has to be a Jewish state only for Jews. How can you do that? Be democratic. That's like saying we are a country only for white people or black people or for Catholics or whatever. That's absurd. Even when it's done in Islam, when they say we're a country only for Muslims, it's crazy. They don't say we're only for Muslims, but they're a Muslim country. The point is that people are allowed to live. And in Israel, it's not like that. Even the Palestinians within the country of Israel, and again, it will take too long to explain, are not. They are only allowed to live in 5% of the land because 95% is considered sacred Jewish or something, and Palestinians can't live there. So it's an apartheid.
Look at my website and you can see
a lot of reading about apartheid. That's the only solution, is for us to recognize that we're all one humanity and to slowly start opening up the borders. And you can have the United Nations, you can have the United States do the security thing, where we can have people and make sure nobody is killing anybody. I mean, look at it now. Everybody's killing, period. And suicide bombers kill innocent people, but so do airplane bombers. They kill innocent people. It's ridiculous.
We're getting close to our ending time, and I wondered, do we have a caller on the line?
Is there a caller on the line?
No, this
is Kim.
Oh, yes. Who is this?
Kim Berker. Can you hear me?
Oh, Kim.
You?
Yeah.
Hi. I've been listening carefully and wanted to point out before you conclude that as Yusuf's key support person, the revolutionary part of the Gaza Freedom March was also not just bringing all these international people and very well organized in spite of the chaos of not being allowed into Gaza, but they have an awesome website, the Gaza Freedom March, and I highly recommend that. There's new postings of articles, of videotapes of those 85 delegates. Now the reports are finally coming in. There's a tremendous amount of very good information. I also wanted to comment on
Jeff Halpert's
talk last evening.
I really appreciate you doing that because that's really what it's about.
So
we got to get the word
out.
And whatever source you get it from, just make sure that you start learning more and objecting more to the inhumanity that's going on. And Kim is absolutely right. We just got to get the message out. And I hope Kim has been my great support person while I was in Cairo and Gaza. And she's just, without her, I wouldn't even know how to even turn on a computer. So thank you, Kim.
Well,
I appreciate that. And we got to get the word out.
Thank you very much, Kim Redding, right?
Actually, this is Kim Berk here.
No, Kim Berk here.
We are often mistaken.
Kim Redigan was another lady that went viral with me. Kim Berk here is here in Michigan. That is a support
person. Well, Kim, I'm sure that we probably run across each other's paths, and I'll look for you next time. I want to thank both of you for your work, and please continue. Palestine needs you. Palestinians need you. Thank you, Yusuf, for being our guest this evening.
Thank you. Thank you. And I say that for everybody listening. We all need you, and you need to start looking at humanity and make sure the suffering stops. Thank you all.
Exactly. As in the words of the late Howard Zinn, do something, do anything, just don't do nothing. Thank you very much. We're looking forward to seeing you next week from 9 to 10 Eastern Time at the People Speak Radio Show. Good night, everybody.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the city wall, by the relief of death, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, the Redwood Forest.